that never yet ne felt offension of razor nor of shear, I will thee give, and be thy true servant while I live. Now, Lord, have ruth upon my sorrows sore. Give me the victory. I ask no more. The prayer, stint of Archytas the strong. The rings on the temple door that hung, and eke the doors clattered full fast, of which Archytas somewhat him aghast. The fires burned upon the altar bright, that it gan all the temple for to light. A sweet smell anon the ground upgave, and Archytas anon his hand uphave, and more incense into the fire he cast, with other rites more. And at the last, the statue of Mars began his hauberk ring, and with that sound he heard a murmuring, full low and dim, that said thus, "Victory!" For which he gave to Mars honor and glory. And thus with joy and hope well to fare, Archytas anon unto his inn is fair, as fain as fowl is of the bright sun. And right anon, such strife there is begun for Thilca granting in the heaven above betwixt Venus, the goddess of love, and Mars, the stern god armipotent, that Jupiter was busy it to stent, till that the pale Saturnus, the cold, that knew so many of adventures old, found in his old experience an art that he full soon has pleased every part. As sooth is said, Eld has great advantage. In Eld is both wisdom and usage. Men may the old outrun, but not outread. Saturn anon, to Stinton strife and dread, albeit that it is against his kind, of all this strife he can remedy find. "My dear daughter Venus," quod Saturn, "my course, that has so wide for to turn, has more power than what any man. Mine is the drenching in the sea so wan. Mine is the prison in the dark coat. Mine is the strangling and hanging by the throat, the murmur and the churls rebelling, the groaning and the privy empoisoning. I do vengeance and plain correction while I dwell in the sign of the lion. Mine is the ruin of the high halls, the falling of the towers and of the walls upon the miner or the carpenter. I slew Samson, shaking the pillar. And mine be the maladies cold, the dark treasons and the castes old. My looking is the father of pestilence. Now weep no more. I shall do diligence that Palamon, that is thine own knight, shall have his lady as thou hast him hight. Though Mars shall help his knight, yet natheless, betwixt you there must be sometime peace, all be you not of one complexion, that causeth all day such division. I am thine isle, ready at thy will. Weep now no more. I will thy lust fulfill." Now will I stinten of the gods above, of Mars and of Venus, goddess of love, and tell you as plainly as I can the great effect for which that I began.
The opening of this part has an impressive description of the preparation for the tournament and of the tournament itself, in which Archytas gains the victory, as promised. But he is also deprived of the fruits of victory by a shabby trick arranged by Saturn that results in Archytas' death, which was not promised. He dies reconciled to Palamon, is given a splendid funeral, and Palamon is eventually wed to Emily as he was originally promised. Theseus and his father Aegeus make speeches about fortune, destiny, and the need to take our fate graciously, since we cannot escape it. Speeches which some readers think philosophical, but which others find platitudinous. Here is part 4 of The Knight's Tale.
Great was the feast in Athens that day, and eke the lusty season of that May made every wight to be in such pleasance that all that Monday joustin they and dance, and spendin it in Venus's high service. But by the cause that they should rise early for to see the great fight, unto their rest went in they at night. And on the morrow, when the day gan spring, of horse and harness noise and clattering there was in hostelries all about, and to the palace rode there many a rout of lords upon steeds and palfreys. There mayest thou see devising of harness, so uncouth and so rich, and wrought so well of goldsmithery, of broiding and of steel, the shields bright, testers and trappers, gold-hewn helms, hauberks, coat-armors, lords' impairments on their coursers, knights of retinue and eke squires nailing the spears and helmets buckling, gigging of shields with lanyards lacing. There as need was they were no thing idle, the foamy steeds on the golden bridle gnawing, and fast the armourers also with file and hammer pricking to and fro, yeomen on foot and commons many a one with short staves, thick as they may gon, pipes, trumpets, nakers, clarions, that in the battle blow in bloody sounds. The palace full of people up and down, here 3, there 10, holding their question, divining of these Theban knights too. Some said thus, some said it shall be so, some held with him with the black beard, some with the bald, some with the thickly haired. Some said he looked grim, and he would fight, he has a sparth of 20 pound of weight. Thus was the hall full of divining, long after that the sun began to spring. The great Theseus, that of his sleep awaked, with minstrelsy and noise that was maked, held yet the chambers of his palace rich, till that the Theban knights, both alike honoured, were into the palace fet. Duke Theseus is at a window set, arrayed right as he were a god enthroned. The people presseth thitherward full soon, him for to see and do high reverence, and eke to hearken his hest and his sentence. A herald on a scaffold made a ho, till all the noise of people was ado. And when he saw the people of noise all still, thus showed he the mighty duke's will. The Lord has of his high discretion considered that it were destruction to gentle blood to fighten in the guise of mortal battle now in this emprise. Wherefore, to shapen that they shall not die, he will his first purpose modify. No man, therefore, on pain of loss of life, no manner shot nor pole-axe nor short knife into the lists send or thither bring, nor short sword for to stoke with point biting, no man ne draw nor bear it by his side. Nor no man shall unto his fellow ride but one course with sharp ygrounden spear, foin, if him list, on foot, himself to wear. And he that is at mischief shall be take, and not slain, but be brought unto the stake that shall be ordained on either side. But thither he shall by force, and there abide. And if so fall the chieftain be take on either side, or else slay his make, no longer shall the tourneying last. God speed you. Go forth and lay on fast. With long sword and with maces fight your fill. Go now your way. This is the Lord's will. The voice of people touched the heaven. So loud cried they with merry steven, God save such a lord that is so good. He willeth no destruction of blood. Up go the trumpets and the melody, and to the lists rideth the company, by ordinance, throughout the city large, hanged with cloth of gold and not with serge, full like a lord this noble duke gan ride, these two Thebans upon either side. And after rode the queen and Emily, and after that another company of one and other after their degree. And thus they passen throughout the city, and to the lists came they betime. It was not of the day yet fully prime. When set was Theseus full rich and high, Hippolyta the queen and Emily, and other ladies in degrees about, unto the seats presseth all the rout, and westward through the gates under mart, Arkite and eke the hundred of his part, with banner red is entered right anon. And in that self moment, Palamon is under Venus eastward in the place, with banner white and hardy cheer and face, in all the world, to seeken up and down, so even withouten variation, there ne'er such companies tway. For there was none so wise that could say that any had of other advantage of worthiness, nor of estate, nor age. So even were they chosen for to guess. And in two rings fair they them dress. When that their names read were every one, that in their number guile was there none, then were the gates shut, and cried was loud, "Do now your devoir, young knights proud." The heralds left their pricking up and down. Now ringen trumpets loud and clarion. There is no more to say, but east and west in go the spears full sadly in the rest. In goes the sharp spur into the side. There see men who can joust and who can ride. There shiverin' shafts upon shields thick, he feeleth through the heart-spoon the prick. Up springin' spears 20 foot on height. Out go the swords as the silver bright, the helmets they to hewn and to shred. Out burst the blood with stern streams red, with mighty maces the bones they to burst. He through the thickest of the throng gan thrust. There stumble steeds strong, and down goes all. He rolleth underfoot as does a ball. He foineth on his feet with his truncheon, and he him hurtleth with his horse adown. He through the body is hurt, and sithen take Maugre his head, and brought unto the stake, as forward was. Right there he must abide. Another lead is on that other side. And some time does them Theseus to rest, them to refresh and drinken if them list. Full oft a day have these Thebans two together met, and wrought his fellow woe. Unhorsed has each other of them tway. There was no tiger in Vale of Galgophe, when that her whelp is stole when it is light, so cruel in the hunt as is Arkite, for jealous heart upon this Palamon. Nay, in Belmere there is no fell lion that hunted is, or for his hunger would, nay, of his prey desireth so the blood as Palamon to slay his foe Arkite. The jealous strokes on their helmets bite, outrunneth blood on both their sides red. Sometime an end there is of every deed. For ere the sun unto the rest went, the strong king Emetrius gan hent this Palamon as he fought with Arkite, and made his sword deep in his flesh to bite. And by the force of 20 is he take, unyielded, and he drawn to the stake. And in the rescue of this Palamon, the strong king Lygurge is borne adown, and King Emetrius, for all his strength, is borne out of his saddle a sword's length. So hit him Palamon ere he were take. But all for naught. He was brought to the stake. His hardy heart might him help naught. He must abide when that he was caught, by force and eke by composition. Who sorroweth now but woeful Palamon, that must no more go again to fight? And when that Theseus had seen this sight, unto the folk that foughten thus each one he cried, "Woe! No more, for it is done! I will be true judge, and not party. Arkite of Thebes shall have Emily, that by his fortune has her fair y won." Anon There is a noise of people begun for joy of this, so loud and high withal, it seemed that the lists should fall. What can now fair Venus do above? What says she now? What does this queen of love but weepeth so for wanting of her will, till that her tears in the lists fell? She said, I am ashamed, doubtless. Saturnus said, Daughter, hold thy peace. Mars has his will, his knight has all his boon, and by my head thou shalt be eased soon. The trumpers with the loud minstrelsy, the heralds that full loud yell and cry, be in their wheel for joy of dawn Arkite. But hearken me, and stinteth noise alight, which a miracle there befell anon. This fierce Arkite has off his helm y done, and on a courser for to show his face, he pricketh end along the large place, looking upward upon this Emily, and she again him cast a friendly eye. For women, as to speaking in commune, they follow all the favour of fortune, and she was all his cheer as in his heart. Out of the ground, a fury infernal start, from Pluto sent at request of Saturn, for which his horse, for fear, began to turn and leap aside, and foundered as he leaped. And ere that Arkite may take and keep, he pight him on the pommel of his head, that in the place he lay as he were dead, his breast to bursten with his saddle-bow. As black he lay as any coal or crow, so was the blood y-running in his face. Anon he was y-borne out of the place, with heart sore to Theseus's palace. Then was he carven out of his harness, and in a bed he brought full fair and blithe, for he was yet in memory and alive, and always crying after Emily. Duke Theseus, with all his company, is coming home to Athens, his city, with all bliss and great solemnity. Albeit that this aventure was fall, he would not discomfort in them all. Men said eke that Arkite shall not die, he shall be healed of his malady. And of another thing they were as fain, that of them all was there none y slain, all were they sore y hurt, and namely one that with a spear was thurled his breastbone. To other wounds and to broken arms some had salves and some had charms. Pharmacies of herbs and eke save they drank, for they would their limbs have. For which this noble duke, as he well can, comforteth and honoureth every man, and made revel all the long night unto the strange lords as was right. Nay, there was holden no discomforting, but as a joust or a tourneying, for soothly there was no discomfiture, for falling is not but an aventure, nor to be led by force unto the stake. Unyielded, and with 20 knights he take, one person alone, withouten mo, and harried forth by arm, foot, and toe, and eke his steed, driven forth with staves, with footmen, both yeomen, and eke knaves. It nas arrested him no villainy. There may no man cleep it cowardy. For which anon Duke Theseus let cry, to stinten all rancor and envy, the gree as well of one side as of other, and either side alike as other's brother, and gave them gifts after their degree, and fully held a feast days three, and conveyed the kings worthily out of his town a journey largely. And home went every man the right way. There was no more but farewell, have good day. Of this battle I will no more indite, but speak of Palamon and of Arkite. Swelleth the breast of Arkite, and the sore increaseth at his heart more and more. The clothered blood for any leechcraft corrupteth, and is in his body left, that neither vain blood nor ventusing nor drink of herbs may be his helping. The virtue, expulsive or animal, from thilke virtue, clipped natural, ne may the venom voiden nor expel. The pipes of his lungs began to swell, and every lacert in his breast adown is shent with venom and corruption. Him gaineth neither, for to get his life, vomit upward nor downward laxative. All is to burst in thilke region. Nature has now no domination. And certainly, when nature will not work, farewell physic, go bear the man to church. This all and some, that Archytas must die, for which he sendeth after Emily and Palamon, that was his cousin dear. Then said he thus, as you shall after hear. Not may the woeful spirit in mine heart declare a point of all my sorrow's smart to you, my lady, that I love most. But I bequeath the service of my ghost to you above in every creature, since that my life may no longer dure. Alas the woe! Alas the pains strong that I for you have suffered and so long! Alas the death! Alas, mine Emily! Alas, departing of our company! Alas, mine heart's queen! Alas, my wife! Mine heart's lady, ender of my life! What is this world? What asketh men to have? Now with his love, now in his cold grave alone, without in any company. Farewell, my sweet foe, mine Emily. And soft, take me in your arms, tway, for love of God, and hearken what I say. I have here with my cousin Palamon had strife and rancor many a day agone for love of you and for my jealousy. And Jupiter, so wise my soul, gee, to speaking of a servant properly with circumstances all truly, that is to say, truth, honour, knighthood, wisdom, humblest, estate, and high kindred, freedom, and all that longeth to that art. So Jupiter have of my soul part, as in this world right now, nay, know I none so worthy to be loved as Palamon, that serveth you and will do all his life. And if that ever you shall be a wife, forget not Palamon, the gentleman. And with that word his speech fail gan, for from his feet up to his breast was come the cold of death that had him overcome. And yet moreover, for in his arms too the vital strength is lost and all ago. Only the intellect without and more, that dwelled in his heart sick and sore, gan failen when the heart felt death. Dusked his eyen too and failed breath, but on his lady yet cast he his eye. His last word was, "Mercy, Emily." His spirit changed house, and went there as I came never, I cannot tell in where. Therefore I stint, I am no divinister. Of souls find I not in this register. Ne me ne list thilke opinions to tell of them, though that they writen where they dwell. Our kite is cold. There Mars his soul guide. Now will I speak in forth of Emily. Shrieks Emily, and howleth Palamon. And Theseus his sister took anon swooning, and bore her from the corpse away. What helpeth it to tarry forth the day, to tell how she wept both eve and morrow? For in such cases women have such sorrow, when that their husbands be from them ago, that for the more part they sorrow so, or else fall in such a malady, that at the last certainly they die. Infinite be the sorrows and the tears of old folk, and folk of tender years, in all the town for death of this Theban. For him there weepeth both child and man. So great weeping was there none, certain, when Hector was y brought all fresh y slain to Troy. Alas, the pity that was there, cratching of cheeks, rending eke of hair. Why wouldst thou be dead, these women cry, and hadst gold enough and Emily? No man might gladden Theseus, saving his old father Aegeus, that knew this world's transmutation, as he had seen it change both up and down, joy after woe, and woe after gladness, and showed them example and likeness. Right as there died never man, quod he, that he ne lived in earth in some degree, right so there lived never man, he said, in all this world that sometime he ne died. This world is but a thoroughfare full of woe, and we be pilgrims passing to and fro. Death is an end of every worldly sore. And over all this yet said he much or more to this effect, full wisely to exhort the people, that they should them recomfort. Duke Theseus, with all his busy cure, casts now where that the sepulture of good Archite may best imaked be, and eke most honourable in his degree. And at the last he took conclusion that there as first Archite and Palamon had for love the battle them between, that in the self grove, sweet and green, there as he had his amorous desires, his complaint, and for love his hot fires, he would make a fire in which the office funeral he might all accomplish, and let anon command to hack and hew the oaks old, and lay them in a row, in culpins well arrayed for to burn. His officers with swift feet they run and ride anon at his commandment, and after this Theseus has y sent after a bier, and it all overspread with cloth of gold, the richest that he had, and of the same suit he clad Archite, upon his hands too his gloves white, eke on his head a crown of laurel green, and in his hand a sword full bright and keen. He laid him, bare the visage, on the bier. Therewith he wept that pity was to hear, and for the people should see him all, when it was day he brought him to the hall that roareth of the crying and the sound. Then came this woeful Theban Palamon, with fluttery beard and ruggy ashy hairs, in clothes black, he dropped all with tears, and passing other of weeping, Emily, the ruefulest of all the company. Inasmuch as the service should be the more noble and rich in his degree, Duke Theseus let forth three steeds bring that trapped were in steel all glittering, and covered with the arms of Don Archite. Upon these steeds, great and white, there sat folk of which one bore his shield, another his spear upon his hands held. The third bore with him his bow Turkish. Of burned gold was the case, and eke the harness. And riding forth apace with sorrowful cheer toward the grove, as you shall after hear. The noblest of the Greeks that there were upon their shoulders carried the bier with slack pace, and iron red and wet, throughout the city by the master street, that spread was all with black. And wonder high right of the same is the street Eri. Upon the right hand went old Aegeus, and on that other side Duke Theseus, with vessels in their hands of gold full fine, all full of honey, milk, and blood, and wine. Eke Palamon with full great company, and after that came woeful Emily, with fire in hand, as was that time the guise, to do the office of funeral service. High labour and full greater paralling was at the service and the fire-making, that with his green top the heaven wrought, and 20 fathom of breadth the arms strought. This is to say, the boughs were so broad. Of straw first there was laid many a load. But how the fire was maked upon height, nor eke the names how the trees height, as oak, fir, birch, asp, alder, holm, poplar, willow, elm, plane, ash, box, chestain, lind, laurel, maple, thorn, beech, hazel, yew, whipple tree, how they were felled shall not be told for me, nor how the gods running up and down, disherited of their habitation, in which they wanted an in rest and peace. Nymphs, fauns, and hamadryades, nor how the beasts and the birds all fled for fear when the wood was fall, nor how the ground aghast was of the light that was not wont to see the sun bright, nor how the fire was couched first with stree, and then with dry sticks cloven a three, and then with green wood and spicery, and then with cloth of gold and with perry, and garlands hanging full of many a flower, the myrrh, the incense with all so great savour, nor how archite lay among all this, nor what richness about the body is, nor how that Emily, as was the guise, put in the fire a funeral service, nor how she swooned when men made the fire, nor what she spoke, nor what was her desire, nor what jewels men in the fire cast, when that the fire was great and burnt fast, nor how some cast their shield and some their spear, and of the vestments which that there were, and cups full of milk and wine and blood into the fire that burnt as it were wood, nor how the Greeks with a huge rout thrice riden all the fire about, upon the left hand with a loud shouting, and thrice with their spears clattering, and thrice how the ladies gan to cry, and how that led was homeward Emily, nor how Archite is burnt to ashes cold, nor how that lich wake was ihold all thilka night, nor how the Greeks play the wake plays, ne keep I not to say who wrestleth best naked with oil anoint, nor who that bore him best in no disjoint. I will not tellen all how that they go home to Athens when the play is done, but shortly to the point then will I wend, and maken of my long tale an end. By process, and by length of certain years, all stinted is the mourning and the tears of Greeks by one general assent. Then seemed me there was a parliament at Athens upon a certain point and case, among the which points ispoken was to have with certain countries alliance, and have fully of Thebans obeisance. For which noble Theseus anon let send in after gentle Palamon, unwist of him what was the cause and why. But in his black clothes sorrowfully he came at his commandment in high. Then sent Theseus for Emily. When they were set, and hushed was all the place, and Theseus abiden has a space, ere any word came from his wise breast, his eyen set he there as was his lest, and with a sad visage he sighed still, and after that right thus he said his will. The first mover of the cause above, when he first made the fair chain of love, great was the effect, and high was his intent. Well wist he why and what thereof he meant. For with that fair chain of love he bound the fire, the air, the water, and the land in certain bounds that they may not flee. That same prince and that mover, quod he, hath established in this wretched world adown certain days and duration to all that is engendered in this place, over the which day they may not pace, all may they yet those days well abridge, there needeth no authority to allege, for it is proved by experience but that me list declaring my sentence. Then may men by this order well discern that Thilke Mover stable is and etern. Then may men know, but it be a fool, that every part deriveth from its whole. For nature has not taken its beginning of no part or cantle of a thing, but of a thing that perfect is and stable, descending so till it be corrumpible. And therefore for his wise purveyance he has so well beset his ordinance that species of things and progressions shall endure by successions, and not etern, without in any lie. This mayest thou understand and see at eye. Lo, the oak that has so long a nourishing from time that it first beginneth spring, and has so long a life as you may see, yet at the last wasted is the tree. Consider eke how that the hard stone under our foot on which we ride and go, yet wasteth it as it lies by the way. The broad river sometime waxeth dry. The great towns see we wane and wend. Then you see that all this thing has end. Of man and woman see we well also, that needs in one of these terms too, this is to say, in youth or else in age, he must be dead, the king as shall a page. Some in his bed, some in the deep sea, some in the large field, as you may see. There helpeth not, all goes that ilke way. Then may I say that all this thing must die. What maketh this but Jupiter the king, that is prince and cause of all thing, converting all unto his proper will, from which it is derived, sooth to tell? And here against no creature alive, of no degree, availeth for to strive. Then is it wisdom, as it thinketh me, to make in virtue of necessity, and take it well that we may not eschew, and namely what to us all is due. And whoso groucheth aught, he does folly, and rebel is to him that all may gee. And certainly a man has most honour to die in his excellence and flower when he is certain of his good name. Then has he done his friend, nor him, no shame, and gladder ought his friend be of his death, when with honour up-yielded is his breath, than when his name appalled is for age, for all forgotten is his vassalage. Then is it best, as for a worthy fame, to dien when that he is best of name. The contrary of all this is wilfulness. Why grouchen we, why have we heaviness, that good archite of chivalry, the flower, departed is with duty and honour out of this foul prison of this life? Why grouchen here his cousin and his wife of his welfare that loveth them so well? Can he them thank? Nay, God wot, never a deal that both his soul and eke himself offend. And yet they may their lusts not amend. What may I conclude of this long siri, but after woe I read us to be merry, and thank in Jupiter of all his grace? And, ere we departen from this place, I read that we make of sorrows too one perfect joy, lasting evermore. And look now where most sorrow is herein. There I will first amenden and begin. Sister, quod he, this is my full assent, with all the advice here of my parliament, that gentle Palamon, your own knight, that serveth you with will and heart and might, and ever has done since you first him knew, that you shall of your grace upon him rue, and taken him for husband and for lord. Lean me your hand, for this is our accord. Let's see now of your womanly pity. He is a king's brother's son, pardy, and though he were a poor bachelor since he has served you so many year and had for you so great adversity, it must be considered, leaveth me, for gentle mercy ought to pass and right. Then said he thus to Palamon the knight, I trow there needeth little sermoning to make you assent unto this thing. Come near, and take your lady by the hand. Betwixen them was made anon the bond that hight matrimony, or marriage, by all the council and the baronage. And thus, with all bliss and melody, hath Palamon he wedded Emily. And God, that all this world has wrought, send him his love that has it dear abought. For now is Palamon in all weal, living in bliss, in riches, and in heal. And Emily him loves so tenderly, and he her serveth also gently, that never was there no word them between of jealousy or any other teen. Thus endeth Palamon and Emily. And God save all this fair company. Amen.
This ends Disc 3. The Canterbury Tales, Disc 4.
The Knight's Tale is immediately followed by The Miller's Tale, one of the great short stories in the English language. It is a fabliau, a French word that means a merry tale, generally about people in absurd and amusing circumstances, often naughty sexual predicaments. The stories generally involve a man, his unfaithful wife, and a cleric who is the wife's lover. Such tales were very popular in France, hence the French term fabliau. But if you read many of them in a collection, you will concede that Chaucer has raised this kind of yarn-telling to an art that most of these French stories do not attain, or even aspire to. In most simple French fabliau, names rarely matter, and the plot always goes thus. There was this man who lived with his wife in a town, and there was this priest, and so on. Characters are indistinguishable from each other shortly after you have read a few French fabliau. By contrast, the characters in The Miller's Tale, Absalom, Alison, John, Nicholas, are very memorable, and the plot is deliciously intricate and drawn out to an absurd and unnecessary complexity, which is part of the joke. Even after many readings, the end still manages to surprise. The Miller's Tale is about two young fellows who are after the same girl in a small English university town, where students lodge in the houses of townspeople. The girl in question is no reluctant damsel, like Emily in The Knight's Tale. She is the young, pretty, but discontented wife of the old carpenter in whose house Nicholas, the university student, or clerk, lodges. The competition is between him and the parish clerk, called by the unusual name of Absalom, a biblical character known, among other things, for his vain beauty, a trait matched by our parish clerk. The love-talking in the tale is more country than courtly. The only physical battle is an uproarious exchange of hot air and hot ploughshare, and the principal cheeks kissed are not on the face. In a much-used translation of the Canterbury Tales, from the early years of this century, The Miller's Tale is censored so severely that the reader is hard put to it to tell what is going on. Custom at that time, and for long afterwards, did not permit the bawdiness of the tale to be accepted frankly, as we would now put it. This sensitivity was not peculiar to the late Victorian age, however. Chaucer himself realized that some people of his own day, like some in ours, might take exception to the comic treatment of adulterous sex. So, just before the tale proper begins, He does warn any people of delicate sensibility who do not wish to hear ribald tales, and invites them to turn over the leaf and choose another tale of a different kind, for he does have some pious and moral tales. Along with the warning comes a kind of explanation. Chaucer pretends that he was a real pilgrim on that memorable journey to Canterbury, and that he is now simply and faithfully reproducing a tale told by another real pilgrim, a miller by trade. Such fellows are often coarse, naturally, but Chaucer cannot help that, he says. If he is to do his job properly, he must reproduce the tale exactly, complete with accounts of naughty acts and churlish words. Of course, nobody has given Chaucer any such job. There is no real miller. He is totally Chaucer's creation, words, warts, and all. Drunken medieval millers did not speak in polished couplets. We are clearly dealing with fiction, in spite of Chaucer's jocose attempt to excuse himself for telling entertaining, indecorous tales. Another little excuse and warning. It is only a joke, he says, and one should not make earnest of game, a warning often neglected by solemn critics. The prologue to The Miller's Tale and the tale itself are here read by Patrick Tull.
When did the knight had thus his tale it told, in all the company ne was the young nor old that he said it was a noble story and worthy for to drawn to memory, and namely the gentles every one. Our host laughed and swore, "So may I go, this goes aright." Unbuckled is the mail. Let's see now who shall tell another tale, for truly the game is well begun. Now telleth you, Sir Monk, if that you can, somewhat to quit with the knight's tale. The miller, that for drunken was all pale, so that aneath upon his horse he sat, he no availed neither hood nor hat, nor biden no man for his courtesy, but in Pilate's voice he gan to cry, and swore by arms and by blood and bones, "I can a noble tale for the nones, with which I will now quit the knight's tale." Our host saw that he was drunk of ale, and said, "Abide, a Robin, leave a brother. Some better man shall tell us first another. Abide, and let us work in thriftily." "By God's soul," quod he, "that will not I, for I will speak, or else go my way." Our host answered, "Tell on a devil way. Thou art a fool. Thy wit is overcome." "No hearkeneth," quod the miller, "all and some. But first I make a protestation that I am drunk. I know it by my sound, and therefore, if that I misspeak or say, wit it the ale of Southwark, I you pray. For I will tell a legend and a life, both of a carpenter and of his wife, how that a clerk hath set the righteous cap." The reeve answered and said, "Stint thy clap, let be thy lewd drunken harlotry. It is a sin, and eke a great folly, to parent any man, or him defame, and eke to bring in wives in such fame. Thou mayst enough of other things sayn." This drunken miller spoke full soon again, and said, "Leave a brother Oswald, who has no wife. He is no cuckold, but I say not therefore that thou art one. There be full good wives, many a one, and ever a thousand good against one bad. That knowest thou well thyself, but if thou mad, why art thou angry with my tailor now? I have a wife, pardy, as well as thou, yet nould I for the oxen in my plough take upon me more than enough, as demon of myself that I were one. I will believe well that I am none. A husband shall not be inquisitive of God's privity, nor of his wife. So he may find God's foison there of the remnant, needeth not inquire. What should I more say? But this miller, he nudd his words for no man forbear, but told his churl's tale. In his manner methinketh that I shall rehearse it here, and therefore, Every gentle wight, I pray, deem not for God's love that I say of evil intent, but for I must rehearse their tales all, be they better or worse, or else false in some of my matter. And therefore, whoso list it not to hear, turn over the leaf and choose another tale, for he shall find enough, great and small, of storial thing that toucheth gentleness and immorality and holiness. Blameth not me, if that you choose amiss. The miller is a churl, you know well this. So was the reeve, eke, and others more, and harlotry they told in both too, aviseth you, and put me out of blame. An eke man shall not make earnest of game. The Miller's Tale. Willem there was dwelling at Oxenford, a rich knaf that guests held to board, and of his craft he was a carpenter. With him there was dwelling a poor scholar, had learned art, but all his fantasy was turned for to learn astrology, and could ascertain of conclusions to demon by interrogations, if that man asked him in certain hours when that men should have drought or else a showers, or if men asked him what shall befall of everything, I may not reckon them all. This clerk was Cleped Handy Nicholas. Of Derna love he could, and of solace, and thereto he was sly and full privy, and like a maiden meek for to see. A chamber had he in that hostelry alone, withouten any company, full fetishly adight with herbs suit, and he himself as sweet as is the root of licorice or any setterwall. His almagest and books, great and small, his astrolabe longing for his art, his augrim stones lying fair apart on shelves couched at his bed's head, his press he covered with a folding red, and all above there lay a gay sautery on which he made a knight's melody, so sweetly that all the chamber rang, and Angelus ad Virginem he sang. And after that he sang the king's note. Full oft and blessed was his merry throat, and thus this sweet clerk his time spent after his friend's finding and his rent. This carpenter had wedded new a wife, which that he loved more than his life. Of 18 years she was of age. Jealous he was, and held her narrow in cage, for she was wild and young, and he was old, and deemed himself be likely a cuckold. He knew not Cato, for his wit was rude, that bad a man should wed his similitude. Men should wedden after their estate, for youth and eld is often at debate, but since that he was fallen in the snare, he must endure, as other folk, his care. Fair was this young wife, and therewithal as any weasel, her body gent and small. A saint she wearied, barred all of silk, a balm cloth as white as morning milk upon her lenders, full of many a gore. White was her smock, and broiden all before and eke behind, and on her collar about of coal-black silk within and eke without. The tapes of her white voluper were of the same suit of her collar, her fillet broad of silk and set full high, and sickly she had a licorous eye. Full smally pulled were her brows too, and those were bent and black as any sloe. She was full more blissful unto see than is the new pear genetting tree, and softer than the woolies of a wether. And by her girdle hung a purse of leather tasselled with silk and pearled with latten. In all this world to seek an up and down there is no man so wiser that could vench so gay a popolut or such a wench. Full brighter was the shining of her hue than in the tower the noble forged knew. But of her song It was as loud and yearn as any swallow sitting on a barn. There, too, she could skip and make a game as any kid or calf following his dame. Her mouth was sweet as braggart, or the meath, or hoard of apples laid in hay or heath. Wincing she was, as is a jolly colt, long as a mast, and upright as a bolt. A brooch she bore upon her lower collar, as broad as is the boss of a buckler. Her shoes were laced on her legs high. She was a primerole, a piggy's eye for any lord to lay in his bed, or yet for any good yeoman to wed. Now, sir, and eft, sir, so befell the case that on a day this handy Nicholas fell with this young wife to rage and play while that her husband was at Ossinay, as clerks be, full subtle and full quaint. And privily he caught her by the quaint, and said, "He whispered, if I have my will, for derna love of thee, Leman, I spill." And held her hard by the haunch-bones, and said, "Leman, love me all at once, or I will die also, God me save." And she sprang as a colt doth in the trave, and with her head she riot fast away, and said, "I will not kiss thee, by my fay." "Why, let be," quod she, "let be, Nicholas, or I will cry out harrow, and alas, do weigh your hands for your courtesy." This Nicholas gan mercy for to cry, and spoke so fair, and proffered him so fast, that she her love him granted at the last, and swore her oath by St. Thomas of Kent, that she would be at his commandment, when that she may her leisure well espy. "My husband is so full of jealousy, that but you wait well and be privy, I wot right well I number dead," quod she, "you must be full derna as in this case." "Nay, therefore care thee not," quod Nicholas. "A clerk had literally beset his while, but if he could a carpenter beguile." And thus they be accorded, and he swore to wait a time, as I have said before. When Nicholas had done thus every deal, and thwacked her upon the lendy's well, he kissed her sweet, and taketh his psaltery, and playeth fast, and maketh melody. Then fell it thus, that to the parish church of Christ's own works for to work this good wife went upon a holy day. Her forehead shone as bright as any day, so was it washed when she let her work. Now was there of that church a parish clerk, the which that was yclepid Absalom. Curled was his hair, and as the gold it shone, and strouted as a fan, large and broad. Full straight and even lay his jolly shod. His road was red, his eye in grey as goose, with Paul's windows carven on his shoes. In hosen red he went full fetishly. Yclad he was full small and properly, all in a kirtle of a light waggette. Full fair and thick be the points set, and thereupon he had a gay surplice, as white as is the blossom upon the rise. A merry child he was, so God me save. Well could he letten blood, and clip, and shave, and make a charter of land or acquittance. In 20 manner could he skip and dance, after the school of Oxenford, though, and with his legs casten to and fro, and playen songs upon a small ribibble. Thereto he sang sometimes a loud quinnible, and as well could he play on a guitar. In all the town, nas brewhouse nor tavern that he ne visited with his solace where any gay lad tapster was. But sooth to say, he was some deal squeamish of farting, and of speech dangerous. This Absalom, that jolly was and gay, goes with a censer on the holy day, censing the wives of the parish fast. And many a lovely look on them he cast, and namely on this carpenter's wife. To look on her him thought a merry life. She was so proper and sweet and licorous, I dare well say, if she had been a mouse and he a cat, he would her hent anon. This parish clerk, this jolly Absalom, hath in his heart such a love-longing that of no wife ne took he no offering. For courtesy, he said, he would none. The moon, when it was night, full bright shone, and Absalom his gittern as he take for paramours he thought for to wake. And forth he goes, jolly and amorous, till he came